personally, I believe that in order to deal with a crisis, you have to do what he wants to do, to wit, allocate intelligently and fairly. And as you say, and I have been fighting down here this battle together with the governor and the mayor of New York and other mayors, etc. But as you say, allocation has a good deal to do with it, and that the allocation is not yet fair to New York and the Northeast, other states there. But I don't believe allocation is going to be enough. I believe we've been very wasteful in the growth of use of gasoline. Remember that the use was supposed to rise this year by a very material margin, so that even what we brought in from Alaska, when we do get it in, would just about take up what we were increasing in the way of use in the year 1974 alone. Now, that's growing unless we find some way to cut it. And I believe the only way you're going to cut it is by the rationing route, which will accomplish both, therefore. Fairness of use, lessening of demand, and a fairer distribution of the available supplies.
On inflation, we seem to have the same situation. The president had essentially an optimistic outlook in his press conference. Then Arthur Burns, the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, came up to the Hill and indicated that we might be on the brink of a two-digit inflation rate. What is your outlook for inflation?
Again, he testified before the Joint Economic Committee, Tina, which I'm the ranking member, so I heard him. I think the inflationary outlook is dismal unless we maintain some right to impose price and wage controls, which means extending the law that permits that for a year from April 30th next. It's right on our facing us right now. There I thoroughly disagree with the administration, which doesn't want it extended. But I would be willing to adopt Dr. Burns' plan, which is somewhat more mild, but still keeps the control mechanism in order. But I do not believe we can take off any power to impose controls and still really curb inflation. And secondly, we need vastly increased productivity in this country. And I do not yet see a real productivity drive on the part of government to help American business achieve that goal. So these are the two criteria that I would impose in terms of trying to make some real progress on inflation, and it's an area in which I do not agree with the administration. And I think most people feel that these price increases are horrendous. Arthur Burns is absolutely right. Two-digit inflation begins to remind you of Brazil and Germany and other places where currency has become worthless, unthinkable in this country. And yet, with this rate of inflation, something which has a right to scare us all. So Herculean measures are necessary. And the president made a great mistake, for example, when he went off controls in phase two to a freeze in phase three. And I think they're going to make an even greater mistake if they go off where they are now and abandon even the power to impose controls, which is what they want to do, and I thoroughly disagree with it.
On another matter, what did you think of the president's statement that a criminal offense by a president is required for impeachment?
I'm sorry to say that I don't agree with that. I rather agree with the House Judiciary Committee majority, which feels that the words in the Constitution, high crimes and misdemeanors, do not mean indictable crimes of a criminal character, like being an accessory after the fact in the Watergate break-in, which would be such a crime. That's what the president implied. I believe that high crimes and misdemeanors mean, in a moral sense, unfitness for office. That doesn't mean differences of opinion on ideology or on philosophy or on particular measures. It means a deep moral fault which makes a man unfit to hold the office that he's holding. And that, in my judgment, is the right definition, and I'm sorry to disagree with the president about it.
You mentioned earlier that the president had said that he will not resign. What do you think that does to Republican candidates in the upcoming election? Must they divorce themselves entirely from the administration?
Tina, I don't think that it does any more than has already been done by the whole complex of what's called Watergate. It's kind of a rubric now to concern a lot of things as it affects the president. I think that Republican candidates, considering the fact that some of this must rub off on the party. Interestingly enough, Barry Goldwater and I both agree on this, though we're from opposite ends of the political spectrum. In my judgment, as some of that must rub off on the party, though the party had nothing to do with Watergate, and it's most regrettable and indeed unfair. It's a fact of life. I believe Republican candidates will have to stand on their own based on their record and their ability to perform for the future. And I believe if they handle their campaigns that way, they will not be damaged by Watergate. The American people are fair, and if they want a man to be senator or congressman because he's the right man for that job, they'll elect him running on the Republican ticket. And I don't think they'll be prejudiced or discriminated against him because of Watergate when they get in that voting booth.
Tied in with that same subject, you said after the victory of the Democrat in Jerry Ford's old district in Michigan that it did not surprise you and that there is no safe district for a Republican in this election.
How that is right, Tina. I'm sorry to interrupt you before you finish, but our time's very short. There is no safe Republican district or Republican state anymore. But I think that's not only attributable to Watergate, which accelerated the process of independence, which has already been prevalent in American political life, where so many people, though they may be enrolled or registered as Republicans or Democrats, really vote a very independent line. And Watergate has accelerated that process. But that doesn't mean Republicans can't be and won't be elected, provided they stand on their own two feet and fully justify themselves as the right fellows for the job they're seeking. Well, Tina, I'm afraid our time's up. Thank you, Tina Galland of the Stora Broadcasting Company, for being with us today. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm going to leave you after the good part.
Oh. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for coming today. It may very well be the final state press conference before election, as it is my intention to leave for New York today and to get to work exclusively on my campaign, unless some commanding problem calls me back, always accepting emergencies. Now and I'd like to thank you for your cooperation, which you've given me throughout, and express the hope that we may reassemble after election, we come back to work here, and that I may have something to celebrate. I'd like to open this morning very briefly with a reference to the president's economic package. I believe that the economic package was inadequate and that it will be up to the Congress to fill in the blanks. And the primary blanks, as I see them, are first to strengthen the wage and price board so that it has subpoena power and the authority to order up to a 60-day cooling off period. Secondly, I believe that a much stronger public service employment program is required than the president has proposed. He's proposed a brief special program, 1 year, for roughly $2 billion. What's needed is a $4 billion program with twice the number of jobs. In other words, instead of in the order of magnitude of 250,000, in the order of magnitude of 500,000, and as you know, with 14 other Senate sponsors, I have such a bill in. Hearings are being held on it, together with the bill, comparable bill of Senator Nelson of Wisconsin, and one of Congressman Daniels, and I'm very hopeful that we will get action. Next point, we need a conservation program respecting oil and gas, which is much stricter than the one outlined by the president, which is highly voluntary, and I'm enrolling as a volunteer myself and will do everything required, but it's still weak. And in my judgment, we need to have a standby authority to allocate scarce resources. We may face that with natural gas. And I have no fear whatever, considering what's at stake in the fact that these Arab countries could bankrupt the world, of the strictest kind of regulations to reduce our demand for overseas oil, eliminating it if possible. I think we can cut consumption in this country by 15%. I will not obviously comment on those aspects of the president's program that I agree with, because, you can assume that, for example, as to coal, I thoroughly agree. I thoroughly agree we need a major coal policy to utilize the coal, and we have to wait a minute on the environmental problems without in any way junking the environmental problems. The next thing that I think we need is an appropriate national food policy. I think this recent imbroglio with Mr. Butts of allowing an enormous export of grain and then having it held up by the White House demonstrates that we need a law which will establish a policy of a given amount of our farm commodities that must be kept in this country, and a given amount that may be exported, and a given amount that should be utilized for famine and other catastrophe and as a food reserve. I think that we need very seriously to meet the problem of housing. Housing is woefully short, so short as to be catastrophic. We have a literally catastrophic situation in the cut in the number of housing starts. They're down to a new low, and if there is going to be a recession in this country, it's going to be touched off by this housing situation. Now, what needs to be done, as I see it, is to pump new money into the mortgage market. We have a bill on this morning to which I will propose an amendment, which I hope will be accepted, I believe it will, which will make New York eligible for participation in the new $10 billion mortgage money pool. And as the bill stands now, New York, because of its statutory usury law, is not eligible. But the amendment, which I'm hoping will be accepted, will make it eligible. Also, I am going to move strongly to see if we can get legislation so that 10% of the assets in the pension funds, which I have helped so importantly to reform under the Pension Reform Act, is utilized for mortgage money, U.S. guaranteed mortgages, and that means $15 billion, a fantastic addition to the mortgage money pool. Also, I'm sponsoring a measure, which is already introduced, to allocate credit, ration credit, if you will, with a preference to housing. And finally, I shall join with others in working hard to exempt $500 for individuals and $1,000 for couples of savings bank interest and savings and loan interest from their taxable income. And I think that's a very big one. And lastly, and then I shall be open, of course, to questions, I welcome very much the final action on the ERDA bill, that is the bill for research and development in energy, which is a $20 billion bill to which I was a party. Senator Percy and I are the primary ranking members of the Government Operations Committee, which turned out this bill. And it will be extremely useful in making good on our promise to seek independence in the energy field, absolutely indispensable. Now, only one other thing that I wish to call to the New York press's attention. The reason that I'm pressing so hard for public service employment and pressing so hard for the continuance of the extended federal unemployment compensation, you know, I've gotten that done by little extensions. But it expires the end of this year, and the president has now come in with his own proposal to the same effect. is that we really have a very serious unemployment situation in New York, and I think the New York press ought to emphasize that. The last figures we have are August, but we have checked back and believe that they generally also cover September. And they show that New York had a rate of unemployment at 6.3%, which is half of 1% in excess of the national average, which is 5.8%. Indeed, New York City had an even higher rate of unemployment than that, slightly over 7%. And when you take individual areas around the state, Buffalo being a very signal example, you're running a rate of 12%. Now, 300,000 New Yorkers are now drawing federal extended employment compensation, that is the extra 13 weeks after the 26th. And that came about because of the ability to extend this law in short periods. But it illustrates the strong impact in our state, which is one of the, which is the leading economic state in the country, though our population is second to that of California. And why, therefore, it's so essential that its senators should be pressing so hard for these measures to relieve unemployment. Thank you very much.
Senator?
Yes.
You have written to President Ford saying that if Secretary Butts presides over another grain fiasco, he should be replaced. I'd like to ask why you think you have to wait on the replacement of Secretary Butts in view of the fact that he's already presided over one successful grain fiasco in nearly a second, and that his own department has now deplored the fact that Butts recommended dairy imports at a time that prices to dairy farmers, including many in your own state, were dropping.
That is absolutely correct, and my only reason for being for giving the president, as it were, another option was that he's new, and I just felt that all of us want to give him a hand, not make his problems even greater. And therefore, I was not what I would have been with the president who had been in office for any continual period of time, strong and say, look, it's time to relieve this fellow and get a new one. But that's what I meant.
You do think it's time to relieve
him? I do, because I believe that the situation has deteriorated in respect of agriculture to that point. But I'm not given, I never have been given to trying to pull down other men. And I don't feel that way now. And therefore, I speak as I do, only based upon the merits of the situation. I don't want to direct it personally to Butts. And it may have been that sense of restraint which induced me not to be as strong as I might otherwise have been.
Senator, you didn't refer to the 5% surtax in your...
Yes. Thank you very much. I believe that the floor is too low. It's 15,000. It should be 25. At 25, I believe it's worthy of consideration, and I will give it every consideration. I'm a member of the Budget Committee, upon whose judgment, when you come to the end of the year, to wit, when we come back, will depend very heavily what we do about trying to cut this budget to $300 billion, not alone by the cuts, but also by what you can add to income. And the second thing is that you've got to pay off the concessions which you're making to business, especially in the investment tax credit, through some assistance to the very low and the very moderate income groups in the tax structure. You've got to come out net with a plus, and that plus ought to be about $5 billion, which is what the president called for.
Senator, would you discuss the propriety of gifts you've received from former Governor Rockefeller and also tell us how much you've received?
I have never received a single gift of any kind or character from former Governor Rockefeller. Former Governor Rockefeller has contributed over the years to my campaigns. Like many, many other people, every penny has been reported, and to this campaign he's contributed $15,000, which, considering Rockefeller, I should be very disappointed.
Do you know, Senator, why you're discriminated against?
Well, I do. I believe that, one, he has a, you know, kind of a feeling that, well, I don't need it. Well, I need it very badly in terms of money. And second, he has other priorities. You know, Governor Wilson and other candidates who worked very closely with him. I think somehow in my case, he doesn't think of me in terms of the being the recipient of his largesse, if you want to call it that. It's just a different attitude toward a person. We're very good friends, as you all know. Now, I want to emphasize this. $15,000 campaign contribution from Governor Rockefeller, considering the nature of the man and his relation to me, is absolutely meaningless in terms of any vote I have to cast on Rockefeller. And I'll cast it exactly as I see it, based upon the record. Now, I introduced him to the committee, and I spoke very, very highly of him, and I feel that way about him. And nobody wants to see him confirmed more than I, but I will act on the record. I wish the New York press to understand that very clearly.
What about the propriety of the governor's gifts to William Ronan and to Henry Kissinger?
I believe that he must testify respecting each gift and satisfy the committee that it was a gift made with complete propriety under all the circumstances, and I'm sure he will.
Are you satisfied?
I never saw a man more anxious to account for himself than Governor Rockefeller in respect of these hearings. He has the, really, I've known him so many years, and he has the most enormous respect for this process. Now, am I satisfied? I must see the whole record when it comes in. And the governor hasn't even spoken to the matter, as I'm sure he will.
Senator, looking at it from the other direction, especially in your foreign relations committee role, how do you think it looks from the other end, from Secretary Kissinger having to spend $50,000 at a time when I believe that's well above the annual salary he would have received as a national security advisor, and it compares with what we are told was his annual retainer for Rockefeller, $12,000 a year. Did that tarnish you, Mr. Kissinger?
Again, I believe that Mr. Rockefeller, former Governor Rockefeller, should first give his accounting, and then, if we think it required, the Foreign Relations Committee can call Dr. Kissinger and get his side of the story, and then we'll judge on the record. In short, I don't think that you can draw any conclusions considering the fact that it's Rockefeller and that Kissinger worked for him for 10 years. I don't want to extrapolate or invent explanations. Let's hear them. All I say is let's hear them and that they should be made.
Senator, you said that Nelson Rockefeller gave you $15,000.
Right.
What about other members of the Rockefeller family?
They have contributed, but fairly modestly. I've got, forgive me, but I'm just going to make a guess. But my guess is that the total Rockefeller contributions of all brothers will not exceed $30,000. In other words, twice that.
What about in past campaigns, sir?
About the same.
Senator,
about the same. Now, I'll tell you what the point is, because I don't want you to get confused. In 1968, I got $200,000 from the Republican State Committee. Now, the Republican State Committee isn't giving me anything this time. It's one of my big problems about money, because they don't want to qualify under federal law. They want to be, and they would have to if they contributed to me. So that's a big hole in my treasury. Now, to what extent Governor Rockefeller may have been in 68 a supporter of the Republican State Committee, frankly, I just can't tell you off the top of my head.
Senator, the New York Times is running a poll that indicates that your opponent, Ramsey Clark, is just a few percentage points behind. Will you indicate what you think, apart from these financial problems, has caused this rather startling upset?
Well, I don't see any upset yet. Wait a while.
to date, in the percentage point.
I don't consider it an upset at all. I think the people of the state of New York and the people of every other state are examining everybody with the greatest care. There are many undecided, of course, and that includes me. And I consider myself doing very well indeed. At this stage of the campaign, before I've gotten into it with the intensity, which I normally do, because of my duties here, I had a very difficult decision to make. Was I going to be the senator that New York expected of me at a very critical time? Or was I just going to walk away from this place, as most everybody does, and just campaign? But I decided that, having spent a lifetime as a servant of duty, that my duty was to see through the major things which had to be seen through, up to and including this morning. And now I'll get into the campaign in a very big way, and I'm confident that I shall prevail. I don't know what percentages you're talking about or what the survey will show, but we'll soon see. But anyhow, I'm not a bit dismayed. On the contrary, I'm delighted to be getting back into it.
How do your own polls make political?
Pardon?
How do your own polls?
I can't afford polls, so I have to depend on your polls.
Senator, the conventional political wisdom at the early stage of this thing had been that Ramsey Clark's views were so far out that you ought to be able to waltz through. Does this mean that the conventional wisdom was wrong, that Ramsey Clark is not that far out on his viewpoints, or what?
I think Ramsey Clark is very far out on his viewpoints. I think the man, in many, many cases, sounds like he comes from Mars. I've given exact examples of that on the Middle East, on the economy, on subway fares, many other things. But that's neither here nor there. I never have any illusions about the electorate. I feel you've got to earn and win every election. And nobody pays you dividends for all the things you've done that people should know about. You have to be sure they do know about them. So I'm not a bit dismayed. I still love every voter. And I'll be out there on the hustings doing my job, and I'm quite confident of the result.
Senator, what are your plans, if any, to campaign with Governor Wilson?
Well, Governor Wilson's schedule and mine would have to match, and it would have to be attractive to both of us, and I believe it will be in given instances, but I'm not, nor is he, hitting the campaign trail together, because the issues are not the same. The audiences that I want to reach and that he wants to reach are not the same. It just isn't opposite. So I've always waged an independent campaign, and I will now. But to the extent that we can, I'll join with the governor.
Senator, let's step back a bit from your own campaign, which you are always an independent. Do you think in terms of other campaigns, President Ford's potential assistance to hard-pressed Republicans is diminished by his tax program and Ford's Biden?
I think what's diminished, if anything, President Ford's help to other Republican candidates is the pardon, which I think was a very serious mistake. But other than that, the warp and woof of his activity, I think, is normal, that of any other president. As a matter of fact, I think the people will kind of lean over to give him a chance. And my pledges to go further in the number of directions of his program is what I've done with every president. It's nothing new for me. I'm not a fellow who follows along on presidents, whether they're Republicans or Democrats.
Don't you think it's significant that people like Senator Goldwater and Fannin even are keeping a bit of a distance on the financial proposals?
Their dynamics, don't ask me about. It's theirs, and my dynamics are mine. I mean, you know, they're the best source.
I'm just trying to get your
I have no idea. I just don't know.
So
I
really don't know. Do you think that the surtax proposal by the president, drafted with the $15,000 floor, despite the warnings from Republican leaders, was ill-advised? Do you think he should have come out right away with a higher floor if he was going to propose a surtax at all, particularly in light of political support?
Well, when you say ill-advised, you know, let's not get personal about it. I disagree with it. I shall do my utmost to raise it to 25, and I shall vote that way. That's the best evidence. Yes,
sir. I came in late, perhaps you touched on it. Will President Ford come into New York State and campaign for
it? I hadn't any idea. I believe that he would feel free to. I'm sure he supports me in an active and very willing way. And I would love to have him come in.
Have you asked him?
But whether he can or not, I really don't know. I haven't asked him, really, but I will, because it's, you know, I'm getting back into it, in a sense, in a very vigorous way, and I'm really just beginning to think about a lot of the things that you normally should have thought about sooner.
How would President Ford help your campaign?
I have no idea whether he'd help or hurt, but in my opinion, when a man is President of the United States and a clean fellow, and Ford is, even though I repeat, I think he made a serious mistake in this premature pardon. He's bound to be helpful to you, and it's a matter of great dignity for me as a senior senator here for so long to have the President of the United States come and speak a word in my behalf.
Senator, getting back to energy, there's a nomination before the Senate of Melvin Conant to be Director of International Economic Affairs for FEA. Melvin Conant be Director of International Economic Affairs for FEA. Now, it's come out in the hearings that he accepted a $90,000 gift from Exxon before he left Exxon, or after he left Exxon, to come to the government. Do you think that man should be confirmed?
I have no idea. I'll look at the record and count into the record the gift and his explanation of it, and if I think he shouldn't be, I'll vote against him. Senator, I have no idea.
Senator, there's been some criticism of the president's job approach because it depends on a national unemployment trigger as opposed to a local one. How essential do you feel it is to have a local unemployment trigger for benefits rather than national?
I think it's absolutely vital. Now, the president's program is not quite as you stated, Alan. He provides for the establishment of the fund if there is a national trigger of 6%, but its distribution to individual labor market areas if they have 6.5% or more. Now, I think I don't like that scheme at all. I believe that it ought to be judged on a local basis, a local market area basis, that is labor market area, and that the figure should not be 6.5%. I think that's too high. I think that's catastrophic unemployment. Now, some people would start the figure at 4.5%. My suggestion is that we started at 5 or 5.5%.
Senator, can you tell us when the new federal judge for the rest of New York will be appointed, and if you have any idea of who it might be?
No, one of the two candidates I suggested is being checked out by the FBI. So that is clear now. There's only one candidate, and I'm all for it. And, well, I don't think that would be fair to the candidate. But it is only one. He's being checked out by the FBI, and there's really, I've talked to the Attorney General about accelerating the process. There's really, he says, we're doing it. You know, they've got to check him out. So it's really the best I can do. I'm very hopeful that it will be completed, you know, within days, and that the first order of business when I'll get him an immediate hearing, and that the moment we come back, he'll be confirmed. Unless, you know, some reason why not. The other thing I'd like to say is that I'm pressing very hard for an added judge for the Western District. I think the Western District needs it very urgently. And so in that both those ways, I hope to bring relief. And I'm very cognizant of the court situation. And I'd like to assure the people of Western New York that there's never been the remotest implication of political judgment about this. I have really done my best to give them the best judge. And with all respect, I've appointed some of the most outstanding judges on the federal bench ever to serve in our state. And I'd like the people to know that.
Senator,
they can blame me if they wish for anything, delays or anything.